your time. Go to kpft.org and fill out a volunteer request form. Or call Anthony at 713-526-4000, extension 301. Come to the volunteer training session at the station on June 29th, 12 noon, or Saturday, June 30th at 3 p.m. You're listening to KPFT.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Yippee! Hooray! Welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee. No?
My Skype's starting up. I hadn't had it started up since I got back, so.
That's true.
So I'm Flicted.
I'm Dwight. And he's?
Groovehouse.
Well, we're going to work on getting Peter on the show via Skype from San Antonio. And Barrett he's bugged out. He decided that he didn't want to be here.
No, he has.
He didn't want to be here.
He has very important personal work to do.
Yeah, apparently he has important work to do, followed by just some hanging out. So he's going to go take some time and be in Florida. Which, you know, I can't say that I envy right now with.
It depends on where you are in Florida.
So. Well, even at its best, at this time of year, it's going to be hot and muggy. And
just like Houston.
Yeah, but at least you don't have to pay money to fly to Houston. So there's that. All right. Well, welcome to the show. We're glad you could tune in. You can find out more about Technology Bites by going to geekradio.com, which is where we host our web presence. Hello, Peter.
I'm Peter Hughes.
Bing!
I'm Peter Hughes.
Really? Is that how
I'm Peter Hughes.
No, I'm Peter Hughes.
I am Peter Hughes. No, I am Peter Hughes.
Dwight's two Peter Hugheses, apparently. He's the I'm Peter Hughes.
It's like the crappiest Spartacus knockoff ever.
Yeah, this is the crappiest everything ever.
My headphones are crappy.
Yeah, well.
Oh, quit whining.
All right, as I was saying, visit us online at geekradio.com. You can check us out there. There's all kinds of good information on the website, including a link to the IRC where we hang out in the channel Tech Bytes on irc.cuckoo.com. You can either use your own client or just use the client that we provide on the website. The phone number here, which you'll want to have for a little bit later on, is 713-526-5738. What do you got there, Dwight? That's your MiFi.
Yes, that's this MiFi that's giving me this, telling me it's connecting at 48 megabits down. It's a Sprint MiFi, and Sprint said today they're turning their LTE on July 15th in Houston. And this will pick that up, but in theory, it's not supposed to be on yet.
What are your speed tests like?
My speed tests are more like WiMAX, which is this MiFi also.
So it's made, it's negotiated a connection, but they're not actually allowing it to have the throughput.
I guess. Someone on Twitter explained, and I've never heard this before, but it is... It sounds like a typical raw PHY layer bit rate for WiMAX, which is what this can talk to. But I wouldn't think that it would be showing you something theoretical and technical for the end user. I think you would see kind of, in theory, what you'd be getting.
So my tests are showing, again, closer to WiMAX speeds.
Why did Dwight get louder all of a sudden? Because his mic hasn't been on that whole
magic.
Thing. Magic fingers.
Actually, it was really cool. Mic 2 was on, and mic 1 and 3 were off.
Okay, so he is getting picked up as an ambient.
And so ambience. You and him both were both getting picked up from the middle mic.
Oh, from this. Oh, so you and I were both off. And this was the one that was live.
Correct.
And these are omnidirectional, right?
Yeah. Well, apparently we could hear. I could hear you in the headphones.
Right.
You sounded very quiet, and I was trying to figure out what was wrong, and then I figured it out.
See, Flicted is still struggling to kind of get back into his groove, which groove was in the groove previously.
Correct.
But now Flicted is. So are you back on like American time yet?
Yeah, it took me 4 or 5 days.
Yeah. I'm not surprised.
But he's still thinking in Russian.
Do you stuff written in English and get confused and worry you may not be able to carry on a conversation with your fellow Americans?
He was like that before he left.
Yeah, true enough. All right. So also we should point out that the Geek Gathering is a week from Friday, which will also be the opportunity that we'll take to celebrate 17 years. Of technology.
Yay.
This Friday or next Friday?
Next Friday. A week from Friday, as I said.
Almost legal.
Yeah. Well, I actually found that great picture of a cake with a binary birthday on it and was able to edit it to make it be 17 in binary.
All right.
Because I'm a nerd or something.
I'll have the 15-inch MacBook Pro with Retina display there.
Will you have it loaded up with...
Diablo 3?
No, I was going to say, were you going to have it loaded up with Parallels, but Diablo 3 would be cool.
The answer is yes to both.
You'll have some heavy-hitting apps so we can see. Now, have you done any experimentation with how long... as we talked about last week with the new MacBook Pro, the 17-inch MacBook Pro with the SSD and all the glorious new hardware that's in there, when Dwight would launch an app on there from the dock... You know, if you've ever used a Mac and you used one, you got your apps in the dock, you click it, the app bounces until the app actually launches. So usually it'll bounce one or, two or three times, and then the app will launch. On the new MacBook Pro, you click it, and before it's even had a chance to bounce one time, the app would open. But that was like Safari and things like that.
Right.
Have you done?
But also iTunes, which usually launch.
But what about some of the, have you done any, played with the?
If you launch, Diablo 3 on it, it takes a while to launch. But a while is relative, It has like two or three bounces and it's launched. If you launch Parallels, It launches immediately, and then when you launch the virtual machine resumes from the state you suspended it in about 3 seconds.
Wow.
Which is, you know, because it takes a long time normally for Parallels to spin up the virtual machine. So it is remarkably fast.
Have you adjusted to the fact that it renders average websites as crap?
Yes, I kind of don't care.
Right. So it's like it's just normal until something truly stunning comes along. It's like, wow.
Right. When you see something that's playing Diablo 3 on it is pretty amazing.
Do you have to do that in Parallels, or is that
a Mac?
There is a Mac version.
Yes. And I've played it both on the device, and I have played it on the new MacBook Pro has an HDMI port, so I connect it directly to my big screen TV and play it there. And actually, I'm watching my wife and son play it because they're both Diablo nuts and have been waiting for this for years, and they asked me if I would not bring it into the studio tonight so they could stay home and play Diablo 3. So that's what they're doing.
I see. I like the idea that it has an HDMI.
Did you get your work to give you a couple of Thunderbolt monitors so you could sort of test out the maximum monitorage from the MacBook Pro?
I have not done that, but that's a good point, and I'll make a note of that, Peter. I like the way you think, son.
Son. Whoa. All right, Pops. All right, well,
No! Join me, and we will rule Technology Bites as father and son.
Yikes. All right, well, we're going to go to San Antonio now and do the father and son news. Take it away, son.
It's the Technology Bytes Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
You know, it's kind of a sign of getting a little old when you start calling everybody son. Anyways, we're going to start way out from reality and then move closer to real reality. Through this info shot. So see if you can stay along when we get to reality. No, this one is really kind of cool. Sounds like something out of a science fiction movie, but researchers have designed microparticles that can be injected directly into your bloodstream to quickly oxygenate your body, even if you can't breathe anymore. It's one of the best medical breakthroughs in recent years and could save millions of lives every year. It was developed by a team at Boston Children's Hospital. It allows medical teams to keep patients alive and well for 15 to 30 minutes despite major respiratory failure. Yeah, that beats the hell out of mouth to mouth. You just shoot them with the oxygen stuff. It's already been successfully tested on animals under critical failure. When the doctor injects liquid into the patient's veins, it restores oxygen in their blood to near normal levels, granting them those precious additional minutes of life. Word is there that various sports cheaters are already exploring the possibilities of what happens when you use that, say the Tour de France or the particles are composed of oxygen gas pocketed in a layer of lipids, a natural molecule that usually stores energy or serves as a component to cell membranes. Lipids can be waxes, some vitamins, you know, there's different kinds of stuff. In this particular case, it's fats. These fatty oxygen particles are about 2 to 4 micrometers in size. They're suspended in a liquid solution that can be easily carried and used by paramedics, emergency crews, and intensive care personnel. This seemingly magic elixir carries 3 to 4 times the oxygen content of our own red blood cells. In the past, stuff like this has failed because it's caused gas embolism rather than oxygenating the cells. You know, everybody's seen like on the movies where somebody gets injected, just inject air bubbles into them and it kills them horribly. According to John Keir, the MD at the Department of Cardiology at Boston Children's Hospital, they solved the problem by using deformable particles rather than bubbles. Quote, "We've engineered around this problem by packaging the gas into small deformable particles. They dramatically increase the surface area for gas exchange and are able to squeeze through capillaries where free gas would get stuck. Basically, he got the idea of an injected oxygen solution after he had to treat a little girl in 2006. Because of a lung hemorrhage caused by pneumonia, she sustained severe brain injuries, which ultimately led to her death before the medical team could get her on a heart-lung machine. Soon after, they started working on the idea. It sounds like magic, but it was just the start of what, after years of investigation, became this real life-giving liquid in a bottle. So that's pretty cool. And it's not even nano. It's just, I guess it's technically... microparticles, so they didn't even get the whole nano prefix on it. But wait, we do have some nano stuff. There's always nano in the news, right? This one could be interesting. Nanoscale microwave transmitters for your phone to pump out all the radio frequency signals that let you make phone calls and consume the internet wirelessly. Actually, your phone uses small chunks of silicon to create microwaves. Science had pushed the little things as far as they could, but now there's a nanoscale version that could make your phone smaller, cheaper, and work better. A team of UCLA scientists has developed a microwave oscillator that uses the spin of electrons rather than the more conventional charge to create radio frequency waves. While that doesn't sound impressive, it does bring major benefits. First, it means the oscillator can be 10,000 times smaller than the ones we use right now. That's a big leap. It means the devices will finally make their way onto integrated circuits. There's the place where all the magic happens, as their size and design is compatible with current chip manufacturing standards. They also create much sharper frequency outputs. That means more data can be crammed into the same bandwidth from a device using such technology. There's less noise, so they provide a cleaner voice and video signal. Unlike many of these kinds of technological leaps, there's no obvious barrier which could get in the way of the science being translated directly into practice. But of course, it's not like it's going to be out tomorrow. This is down the road, just like the oxygen injections. But you don't have to go to an emergency room to get the nanoscale microwave transmitter. And I don't know, maybe the iPhone 7. I'll put that out as a rumor first. See, this way Technology Bites can break out ahead with Apple phone rumors that are so advanced that Apple hasn't even thought about it yet. In other news, and there'd been suspicion about that this change coming from Apple because podcasts kind of fell out of iTunes. They weren't in the same place as before, but suddenly Apple has officially launched a separate app for users to manage and listen to podcasts, straightforwardly titled, oddly enough, Podcasts. The major advantage of the app is that it erases the distinction between podcast episodes that have and have not been downloaded, which is has been a hang-up in the music app, you know, in iTunes, and one that podcast makers have previously had to circumvent. The app also adds more robust tools for managing podcasts on iOS devices themselves. In the past, iOS users had two options for getting a podcast onto their device. They could download it to PC, then transfer it via a USB cable, or download it straight to the device itself. Streaming was recently added feature, but had few options for navigation and didn't really work. Because podcasts can sometimes be long and rambling affairs, this resulted in tiresome download times. Many popular podcasts, such as WTF with Marin, circumvented the creating a separate app for the podcast that allowed streaming. And now Apple's erased the download distinction itself and, as a consequence, further smudged the line between the podcasts you subscribe to and podcasts you don't. That's pretty cool. If you've subscribed to podcasts, they automatically populate the screen with both downloaded and undownloaded episodes chronologically. If it's not downloaded yet, a small gray button with an arrow displays next to it, and that will start the download if you press it. But even if it isn't downloaded, you can still tap on it and hear the content via streaming, provided, obviously, that you're connected to data or Wi-Fi. So that you can actually get a signal. There's individual setting menus for each podcast where users can flip switches to subscribe or not, auto download or not. You can sort the episodes by newest or oldest first and mark all as played or unplayed with the tap of a button. So they've really looked at making this more useful than it's been before and make podcasts a lot simpler to listen to and use, especially on your iOS devices. So now it'll be even easier for you to listen to the Technology Bytes podcast, which you, of course, are subscribed to, right? Anyways, even if you're not, see, now if you have an iPad or other iOS device, you can do that easily anyway. More futuristic stuff. In a trio of announcements today, Cisco unveiled a next-generation Wi-Fi router, a media sharing hub, and an ecosystem meant to support both devices. The new Linksys smart Wi-Fi router and universal media connector will work in conjunction to allow users greater device interoperability at speeds up to 3 times faster than current Wi-Fi routers. Cisco hopes the two new devices will find support from developers, and they've also rolled out a new community aimed at building an app ecosystem to take advantage of the device's capabilities. Basically, the smart Wi-Fi router features Draft 802.11 AC. It stands for air condition. Anyways, Wi-Fi technology, the forthcoming standard in Wi-Fi transmission, which is several times faster than current routers. It is backupable with wireless networks and devices with ABG and N, so you don't have to worry about that. It operates on the 2.4 gigahertz band up to 450 megabits per second, and on the 5 gigahertz band at up to 1,300 megabits per second. That's pretty decent. Features 2 USB ports, 4 gigabit Ethernet LAN ports, and 1 gigabit Ethernet WAN port. The Universal Media Connector, the other thing, allows users to connect TVs, game consoles, and other devices to a Wi-Fi network and stream HD 3D content wirelessly. That's got a bunch of Ethernet ports and operates in the 5 gigahertz band, so you get a good clear Wi-Fi signal. It also has backwards compatibility with 802.11 A and N. So looks like Cisco's looking at some interesting stuff moving forward. They're kind of out on the front on this new technology. So we'll keep an eye on what they're doing with that. But I'm ready for 1,300 megabits per second on my Wi-Fi. I don't know about you. But and then another big thing that's been going on this week, you know, we had, let's see, a few weeks ago it was Apple. Then it was Microsoft. Well, who's left that needs to have their big developer conference? Because it's that time of year, right? It's Google. So they had Google I.O. And they announced a slew of new products, including Nexus 7 tablet, Nexus Q, which is a home media streamer for Android devices. They Jelly Bean, which is Android 4.1. It adds a Siri-like voice feature whose answers are powered by Knowledge Graph, the massive data graph that Google introduced in May that makes search easier and more intuitive. Apparently, it also includes a feature called Google Now, which pulls from things like your search and location history and your calendar to predict what information you might need and when. For example, if you're at a bus stop, Google Now will automatically deliver you an up-to-date schedule. So they're kind of paying attention to what your context so that you get better results. Let's see, Google Now delivers that information on different cards, such as a calendar card, a restaurant card, and it gets smarter and more accurate as you feed it more info. Let's see, it also gets a boost from Project Butter, like Butta, an effort to boost speed and performance on Android devices. Other handy features, it's got an offline voice input feature, which lets your device transcribe your voice recordings without a data connection. Notification system that lets access lightweight features on apps like a like on Foursquare or something like that without having to open the app itself. This should start coming out to Galaxy Nexus, Nexus S, and Motorola Zoom devices in mid-July. Next thing, Nexus 7 tablet. It's a 7-inch tablet optimized to take advantage of the cloud-based Google Play, which features 600,000 apps and games as of today, magazines and TV shows. Features a 1280 by 800 HD display and is fairly light for a tablet, weighing it at 0.7 pounds. It has a front-facing camera that lets you hang out on Google+, surf the web on Chrome, and check email on Gmail. And the price is $199, so you know who that's aimed at. This is a tablet that's aimed directly at the Kindle Fire. Clearly a person's eyes and so on, but you get kind of the Google, you get the Google thing with it instead of Amazon's piece. So, you know, so you get a choice. If you were thinking about, you know, it may be something you want to consider. If you were thinking about a Kindle Fire, this might be a step up. The Nexus Q home media streamer that they announced, it's orb, it's round. It looks, you know, you think of Google and you think things sort of square and dull. It's an orb. It's round with a flat side that sits on the ground. It's Google's answer to the confusing consumer electronics mashup of hardware, software, and the cloud. Friends and family can use their Android devices to control and consume content together via Nexus Q, whether it's a music or a movie. It plugs into your speakers or TV at home. The only catch is you have to own an Android device to tap into it. It's about $300, and that's coming out in mid-July. Google Plus, they're pushing, they added Google Plus events. Lets Google Plus users send beautiful, rich media invitations called cinemagraphs as they plan events. Google Plus events feature Google Calendar integration, lets you invite people who aren't on Google Plus, and offers a party mode feature you can turn on that lets guests at an event post photos in real time to the event's Google Plus page. That's kind of cool. It's got a new design for mobile devices, including a native tablet app that makes photos the main attraction in your Google Plus stream. It should be available for the iPad soon as well, according to Google. And then Google Glass. Sergey Brin jumped on stage to demo a hangout with skydivers bedecked in glass, Google's wearable computer specs, 2.5 years in the making. Glass acts as a wearable camera that you can use to capture images and video from your unique vantage point, letting others see your point of view. The thing they announced, the other piece, the big piece with Glass that they announced is if you're at Google I.O., and you really wanted to get your hands on Project Glass, they've opened up pre-orders for Glass Explorer Edition, a developer version of the headset, heads-up display glasses. But Google said it's been steadily working on refining the hardware along with the software. It's $1,500. Orders are only available to Google I.O. attendees. It's $1,500. So I guess you have to, like, hurry and get out there and sign up if you wanted one. The cool part with that, not so much for any of us, not, you know, obviously you have to be there to buy, but several of the people who have been covering Google I.O. signed up for the glasses. And so when they get them, then we get to hear what they learned. And finally, on new stuff, I mean, this whole news thing has been new stuff for today and for the next several years. But this one is actually going on sale soonest, and it's sort of the most traditional hardware thing. You know, when you watch DVDs, even if you watch, you know, even if you've got a widescreen HD television, you notice you still get the bars, the black bars show up. Vizio, though, now has an ultra widescreen LCD TV that's got, you know, everybody knows the 16:9 ratio thing. Well, that's why you get black bars on top, is because the real widescreen thing is actually 21:9. And so the new Vizio TV is going to start shipping. It's a 58-inch model. Its focus remains on that 25x60x1080p screen, so it's just wider, obviously, for the same height, whose stretchy 21.9 aspect ratio fits what you often see at the movie theater without having to crop or adjust like you would with a 16x9 set. Whether or not you have a chronic aversion to black bars, the CinemaWide is still a respectable TV set in its own right, with edge-based LED backlighting, that's the hot thing, 120 hertz refresh. That's pretty cool. A Bluetooth remote. That's kind of neat. I don't know a lot of TVs that have that. So you don't have to have like line of sight and you can be 30 feet away. The price for immediately launching it, they announced this last October and then they said March and then now it's showing up. So perhaps that's why they lowered the price from the originally quoted $3,500 and it's, $2,800, which is very competitive for this kind of cutting edge stuff. And you actually can pick up the CinemaWide TV for $2,500 if you're that hot for it and act quickly, it's available. And that's the news.
All right. 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us. Did you get some working headphones, Dwight? Are you set?
No. Well, I'm there. The right side is working. The left side is not. But you know what?
You don't care.
I don't care anymore. I've lost the will to live. We need our post-fundraiser headphone refresh.
Our headphone bump.
Right.
All right. So the number again, 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us tonight. We are inviting your calls. We had one call earlier, but apparently it was not
It was a butt dial.
We got butt dialed or booty called.
Well,
or something.
Something.
So, yeah, that was not valid. But all the lines are open, and we are taking your calls this evening. Hey, Flicted, how was what were you using while you were in Russia for phone stuff, out of curiosity, if anything?
I used Skype a little bit, not a whole lot. Mostly I used Google Voice.
Google Voice.
So, yeah, so I'd actually log in on my, I have some personal domain accounts. So I would log in on it, and it's tied to a Google Voice number. And so whenever somebody would call that number in the U.S., it would ring on my computer and on my phone because I have the Google Voice app on my phone. So it wouldn't ring, you know, my real phone number in the U.S., my AT&T number, but it would ring the Google Voice number, which would get transferred over the internet, over voice over IP to my laptop and my phone, and then I could pick up the call on either one of those.
As long as you were on Wi-Fi, I guess, right? Or yeah. Did you have a cellular plan?
I had 3G. Yeah, I had 3G there. And then I would also could send text messages and receive text messages the same way through Google Voice. So it
cool.
Basically allowed me to make free calls and have people call me for free to the U.S. and back.
Do you get a lot of calls from the U.S.?
Seven or eight, maybe.
How popular were you when you were gone?
How what?
Anybody miss you? Were you popular while you were gone?
Were you missed?
I think so.
By people other than us?
I think so.
We missed you.
We sure did.
We missed you something powerful, son.
Something fierce. All right, 713-526-5738, that entertaining banter. Woo! Entertaining banter with Flicted did not buy us any phone calls, so we still have open lines if you want to be on the air with Technology Bites. We invite you to call.
Somewhere out there, there must be a computer that needs fixing.
Or, you know, somebody with a problem, I'm sure.
Well, we don't want just any problem. Like, we don't want people calling, you know, with, like, their husband ran off with another woman. We don't want those kind of calls. Because do you feel like you could fix that?
No, but we could have fun at their expense.
Your iPhone, we could probably come up with something, but...
All right. Well, if we don't get any computer calls, we may have to resort to having...
Take some relationship calls.
Relationship calls.
That actually could be pretty funny.
Especially with us at the helm.
Yes.
Or could be disastrous, especially with us at the helm.
Well, you know, although, you know, I think my wife's a psychotherapist. I mean, I could channel her.
I feel qualified. That's right. WWLS.
Maybe we get her on the phone and do a conference call.
Do relationship advice.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I don't think that would
go. Just crank up. What was that... Was it Eliza or something, the one that was the chat bot?
Oh, yeah.
Right,
Right. We can just use whatever answers it. Type in what they say and use the answers
have
back.
Have you ported Eliza over to a like a Java app or anything?
Oh yeah, there are Eliza websites.
Oh, all right.
There, in fact, for a while, I don't think they'd have it anymore. But AOL had an Eliza bot on AOL Instant Messenger, and you could make Eliza your buddy and then talk to her.
Really?
Yes. Yes, back in the day.
How far back?
Pretty far back. Oh, look, we have an actual call.
Well, what do you know about that? Groovehouse has already got them prepped, screened, and ready to go. So, we still have plenty of open lines if you want to be on the air with us tonight. 713-526-5738. But now, we do have a call in the queue, so we will take that. Groovehouse?
Yes.
And I'm the one hanging up tonight. I have to remember this because I usually Barrett is here and handles such things, but now it's me. So put that away. All right, Groovehouse,
yes.
Who do we have up?
All right, up first on the show, we're going to take Jim.
Jim, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, guys. This is an Android question. So is anybody there? I know you guys are all into Apple stuff.
I have an Android.
I have an Android.
Groovehouse has an Android.
Okay.
Well, we're Android savvy.
Well, what's driving me crazy, I like a lot about, I've got an Android Razr with Verizon, and it's pretty good, but the one thing that's driving me up the wall is that I have not been able to figure out how to sync my contacts with my Outlook from Microsoft, you know? And I know they want you to use Google everything. Google,
yeah, Gmail.
Google Calendar, Google Calendar, Google Contacts, Google everything. But I've been using Microsoft Office Outlook for work, you know, for like 20 years or however long it's been around. So everything I've got is on Outlook. As soon as I update in Outlook, there's no way to get it over to my phone, you know?
Are you using an Exchange server at work?
No.
Well, see, that's kind of the way to do it with Outlook and Android is over an Exchange server. I don't think it's very easy to do it from just straight Outlook that I'm aware of.
There's an app, I believe, that will pull, have you done any research on this or you just declared it?
No, I've researched the daylight side of it and have come up with nothing. Because
you wanted to get your contacts or your calendar out of Outlook onto your phone?
To sync.
But when I first started, I used to have a BlackBerry before I got this Android, and BlackBerry really had it down as far as syncing everything with Microsoft Outlook into your BlackBerry. So I had everything perfectly synced into my BlackBerry when I got my phone. Well, when I got my new Android phone, and then they have this thing called Verizon, what the kick do they call it, but they can uplink off your BlackBerry, put it in their system, and then download it to your Android. So the day that I got my Android and did all that, for that day and that day only, I was synced. You know what I'm talking about on that one?
Not really.
Okay, well.
Yeah, I mean.
I was called backup assistant. That's what it's called, okay?
Well, I know that for the Android, like Dwight mentioned, the best way is if your Outlook is connected to an Exchange server, you can set the Android up to connect to Exchange. It pulls all your calendar information. But you're talking about personal style or pop email for Outlook, right? Who hosts your email?
I don't know. It's a company thing, you know?
Are you sure it's not Exchange?
But here's the thing. I'm using Comcast.net for my
Comcast
email address.
All right,
I can't even get it. I don't see what the Exchange has to do with it.
I wanted to make sure that if you're talking about work email and with the uncertainties that you've expressed in the phone call, I wanted to make absolutely sure that you weren't, in fact, using Exchange. You dismissed it pretty readily, but I wanted to be sure because
we wanted to. We used to have it, and then somebody decided it wasn't working, and so they dumped it. But the thing is, I have all my work and my personal email combined together in my Outlook. and there's not that much of it that was different. I can't even get the stuff that normally is just personal on my own personal Outlook that goes through Comcast, to get out to the internet. I can't even get that to sync, let alone the work thing, you know?
Well, it's true to say that the Android phone is really geared for Gmail. It ties into your Gmail, and it gets all of its information from Gmail. Now, you could conceivably set up a Gmail account and have it connect to your Comcast mail and pull that information over as it's up there. It wouldn't get your calendar information. But there is there's a Google Calendar app, I believe, that is available for the Android that would get your calendar information. But I was just looking online, and basically they come to the same conclusion that you did. It's kind of a pain in the butt to get it to work.
Yeah, which is kind of strange because, there's got to be...
Now, take that back. Wait a second. Now, the problem with Popmail for calendars and stuff is that... it's not designed like for corporate use. So the ActiveSync that you would use if you were using Exchange would be, ideal, but obviously not what you have. Now, you can configure the Android phone to connect to a POP account. So you could configure your Android phone to connect to your Comcast mail.
Well, yeah, the mail part. I already have that set up.
Okay, good. So you can definitely get your mail, and then all you need is just an app to get your calendar.
Right, and the thing that drives me crazy is that, I personally probably know 1,000 people, and there's probably millions worldwide that use Microsoft Outlook the way I do. They're in their late 40s or early 50s. And then the Android phone comes along, and it just leaves all of us lurch, really, as far as getting...
Well, how tied to your Comcast email are you? Because you could set up a Gmail account and use Outlook to manage it, and then also connect that to your phone.
I don't think the Comcast email has anything to do with it because I have that solved. My issue is that I'm sitting at my desk, right?
Yeah.
My desktop on a laptop or my desktop computer,
right?
And I'm sitting there as people are calling me and whatever, emails are coming in, I'm updating my address book in Outlook,
right? But
and
you're up
out of the door, it's not on my phone, and I can't get it on my phone. And then
I got that. Let me have a second here. I got that. So the thing is that because you're using Outlook to connect to a Popmail account through Comcast, all of the changes that you make only exist on your computer. So right. they don't exist on your phone. So when you go out the door, you don't have that.
And the opposite is also true. If somebody calls me on my phone,
I understand that. Let me finish.
Right.
What happens is because it's a Comcast account and all of that stuff exists on your PC, it's hard to sync it up. However, if you used Outlook and your email account was a Gmail account, then it updates that on the Gmail server, so whatever device you use to connect to your Gmail account, whether it's your computer at home, a laptop, an Android phone, or even an iPhone or an iPad or whatever, all that information would be available to all the devices. So okay, if you were to say, look, I'm no longer going to use Comcast as, and I know it's a pain. I know it's not an easy thing to consider, but one of the things that I thought about when I was moving into the mobile age and wanting to use a mobile phone to do all this is that the Gmail's free email service had a lot of features and a lot of availability to do these type of things, whereas a standard POP account doesn't. And granted, there's software solutions out there that will take your Outlook information off your PC and sync it to your phone. There are apps for that. You can go out and they're kind of a kludge, but you can find them and they'll do that.
Yeah, have you tried any of those? Because I've looked at a few of those, and it seems
like I said, when I made the decision to enter the smartphone age, I saw the Gmail account as the way to go because I remember having to take all your contacts off of a SIM card and back them up, yeah, and then re-import them on the phone. But because everything's in Gmail, anything I connect to that Gmail account, I get.
I think what Jay's saying is that yeah, there are some hassles in switching over. The end result, the benefit, is greater than the hassles you'd go through getting there.
Right.
Are you saying that all my contacts would be Gmail contacts?
Yes.
And an Outlook would see that and it would sync that way?
It should. I mean, when you configure Outlook to connect to your Gmail account, it's right. going to see all the information that Gmail has. Because all your contacts are no longer stored locally. They're stored in your Gmail account. So, like, when my Android phone comes online, I got my second Android phone, and I plugged in my Gmail information, and there's all my contacts. And anytime I update my contacts on the phone, it updates it in Gmail. Now, I do not use Outlook to connect to my Gmail. I just use the web interface because I find that perfectly suitable, and I can get to my calendar and everything. But I have every reason to believe that if I was to load Outlook and configure it to connect to Gmail, that all that information would be there.
You can, if you do a Google search for sync Outlook contacts with Gmail contacts, you'll see some descriptions of what you have to go through to do it. It ain't that hard.
So does it go the other way? So, like, if I'm on my phone and I update a contact, then the next time I turn on my PC at home, then
we'll see that contact.
I have not
used the Outlook component of this equation, but I believe that to be true. And one of the additional benefits of using a standalone email service like Gmail is that if you leave Comcast and say go to AT&T, you don't have to go through the hassles of changing your email address. I mean,
right.
So right now, if you close down your Comcast account because something better comes along, you're going to have to go through this rigmarole anyway. So what I would suggest that you do is maybe, as a test, set up a Gmail account and just try that. And go ahead and configure your Outlook. You can configure Outlook to connect to multiple accounts, so you can connect that and set up some unique contacts in Gmail and see if that doesn't do it for you. Because I bet you that it would.
Okay, yeah. My only gripe with Google is that they just seem to be, like, so, you know, they're in every crevice of your life, you know what I mean? And so I was a little reluctant to give them full reign of everything that I do for fear of being marketed to while I'm dreaming, you know? But,
well,
I get what you're saying.
Yeah, unfortunately, if you're looking for ease, then you kind of have to sell your soul to one devil or the other when it comes to technology. But I like the idea of having all my stuff in one location, because I go to any computer, I can log into my Gmail account, I can get my contacts, I can get my mail, it's all there.
Right, so let's say that you were in a place where you did not have an internet connection for a while. Like an airport where you didn't want to pay the fee or whatever reason, you know, vacation house somewhere, and you want to work on your Outlook and set up emails and so on and so forth. You're cut off from everything if it's all out there on an aircraft.
Not necessarily, because Outlook does cached mode. Outlook has a cached mode where it pulls a local copy down to your computer of everything that it sees on the server at the time. And you can work in that email, and then when you senses that you have an internet connection again, it'll do all the updates.
So I get that. Yeah. I mean, because it generates that little PST file.
It generates actually an OST file if you use the cached mode.
Uh-huh.
But if PST file is when you pull it off the server and store it on your computer. So certainly you could download all your mail at any given time to a PST file.
Yeah, well, see, that's what happens to me anyhow, because I'll pull it down, and then I'll store emails in different folders and things like that pertaining to different projects I'm working on and all that, and I have not been able to figure out how to do that with Gmail. I do have a Gmail account, but I just keep it because I had to have it in order to set up my Android phone in the first place. And
Well, keep in mind, if you're at an isolated situation where you can't get to the internet on a PC, you're not going to be able to get to your Comcast email either.
No, No, but I can get to.
But he has the local copy of all of it, so
which you'll have
anyway. Because you can connect to the Gmail account the same way you're going to connect to your Comcast account.
Again,
it'll pull it down off of Gmail, right?
Yes, just like
any PST file, right?
You can, or you can have it. You can experiment with cache mode and just have the offline copy so that it detects that it's offline and has the cache of all your mail. But yes.
But when you're just in the world of Google and you've left Microsoft Office and Outlook behind, like you guys seem to have done, right?
Yeah.
And I have yet to figure out how you can store emails in different folders on a phone. You know that can be done?
No, you can't do that on the phone. You can't store in different folders. Gmail sets up different tags. You can set up tags for your different emails, but it doesn't use folders.
Doesn't use the name of folders, but it's the same effect. You have an inbox tag. You have an inbox. You have all mail. And actually, on the phones, depending on the client you're using, it can just be labeled a folder. It doesn't really matter what it actually is. The effect is the same.
Yeah, because I don't know that that's true on the Android under Verizon.
Well, it sounds to me like maybe you need to get a Windows phone. I think we could make this real simple.
Yes.
Yeah,
if you're not happy with the technology you have and the way that it can be implemented, perhaps you...
My theory is that I don't understand it.
I agree with that.
It's like, got to be there. And I'm thinking, you know, there's millions of people that use Outlook. There's millions of people that are buying Android phones. And I'm the only guy that can't figure out how to sync his Outlook with his phone.
That's because most of the people.
Email, you know?
That's because most of the. That's
well, the real secret is Microsoft knows that the keys to the kingdom with Outlook is that calendar. And so they don't make it easy to put your calendar anywhere but on a Microsoft device. I've been through that with an office that I switched from an Exchange server to. They went Apple. And the biggest problem was they wanted their, you know, email and calendar and address book stuff to work exactly the same as it did with an Exchange server with Outlook, and you can't do it. It doesn't work. It doesn't work that way. And so the deal is what you're coming up against, even though you don't have an Exchange server, is you're coming up against Microsoft's what they've chosen to lock you in with, which is the calendar, and that's why you're having such a pain with it.
Right. And so your advice is just either go all Microsoft with a phone or dump Microsoft and go all Google.
Well, I think there's a mix. You can have a mix. I think you can, instead of using Comcast PopMail and Outlook, you could use a Gmail account, which would then give you Outlook functionality and Outlook access, as well as smartphone and tablet access.
So you'd have with the calendar too.
I'm not going to say this any more times than I've already said it. I think that I'll say it one more time. I believe that it will work the way that I've described it. I recommend to you that you ultimately that you just go and try it. Set up your Gmail account. Set up an Outlook instance to connect to it. Create a contact on your phone. See if it shows up in your Outlook. Try it out. It will be absolutely free to do it, and it'll take less time than this conversation. All right, Groovehouse, 713-526-5738. If you want to be on the air with us tonight, who's up next?
All right, up next on the show, we're going to take Andrew.
Andrew, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, guys. Appreciate you taking my call. Hope it's not too dumb. I know, no question's dumb, but... what it is my wife bought me a computer, which I appreciate, but it only had 2 gigs of RAM.
Yikes.
So I was connecting to the internet and trying to play one of those World of Warcraft-type games while flipping over to the internet for, like, my YouTube for the music. And it slowed down real really badly. I had a friend come over to try to do some partitioning. Helped a little bit. So I decided to just go ahead and get an additional computer. That had 8 gigs of RAM.
Why don't you just add RAM to the computer that you had?
The E-Machine, when I wanted to add it to it, when I took it back to Best Buy to have it done, then they started talking about a CPU or the fan would work or whatever.
Oh.
So, and actually I had a pretty good deal on the 8 gig.
All right. Well, if you got a good deal on a new computer, there's nothing wrong with a new computer. As long as you weren't suckered
and
into
it. So now I'm running two computers. I had all the music and everything I had downloaded to on the original computer. They had a good deal on some external hard drives, terabyte hard drives. So I pulled all my music from the old computer onto this external drive. And I know I can connect the two computers because I use one computer for the internet and the other computer, the 8 gig for a while I'm playing the games online. I want to be able to see if I can have them connect other than hardwired, other than through the Wi-Fi, because they do connect, but I have to have the external hard drive with all the music, and then I have another one with all my videos going to one of them. Is there a way, like a hub or something, that you can connect both computers to that they can each pull from the external drives?
You would have to do it where you would have the hard drive. You could either, there's what they call a NAS or a network server hard drive where two computers can share the information that's on that drive.
Okay.
But you'd have to get a specific drive that's designed to do that, a network external drive. If you have one right now that's only USB, you'd have to connect it to one computer and share it and then have the other computer connect to it as a share.
Okay, but is that going to be going through the Wi-Fi?
It's going to be going through the Wi-Fi or your Ethernet, depending, yes.
Okay.
And same with the other.
The Ethernet that goes into the back that I have to have for the Internet, and there's only one Ethernet port on both of the computers.
That's fine. I mean, if the hard drive is connected to one computer that's connected to your network, then the other computer is going to connect to that drive over the network by sharing the drive.
Okay, so then I should be able to access music files.
You can access all the files on it. Because so what you do is on the one computer that the drive is connected to, you find that drive under My Computer, you right-click it, and you share it. You give it a designation.
Oh, okay.
And then on the other computer, you connect to that share. So do some Google searching on how to share a hard drive over the network.
Okay.
And that's how you would do it.
Oh, so I don't have to go, because for some reason I don't know much about computers. I thought I had to go get a router hub or something.
Are both computers connected to the internet at the same time?
Yeah.
So you already have a hub.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So,
I didn't know, because the hub only has the Cat 5, and I didn't know, if...
That's fine. As long as the two computers can see each other, you're fine. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I just need to Google it and then just get...
Google share drive between two computers and then your operating system. You'll figure it out.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for your help. I really appreciate it.
All right, thanks for your call tonight.
Take care.
All right. Well, we've only had two calls tonight, but we chewed up an entire hour of programming. So
one more hour to go.
I'm sure that we'll do fine in the second hour. If you want to be a part of the second hour of the show, call.
You just need two more calls.
That's right. 713-526-5738. If you want to call and get in the queue, 713-526-KPFT. We're going to get ready to step away here for a bit and do a little station business, but we'll come back in a few minutes. But again, if you want to be on the air, 713-526-5738 or 713-526-KPFT to be on the second hour of the show, second hour of Technology Bites. But right now, we'll be right back. Right now.
Stay tuned at 3 p.m. weekdays for some of KPFT's finest talk, as well as your calls and community. On Mondays, catch Bob Sanborn and Mandy Kimball on Growing Up in America. On Tuesdays, tune into Earth 101 with host Hataji Abdulaziz. Hear Connect the Dots on Wednesdays with Minister Robert Muhammad, tackling local and national issues. New Capital is on Thursdays at 3. Host Leo Gold talks with you about economics, the environment, philosophy, and law. And don't miss Partisan Gridlock with Jeff Berg on Fridays, talking about national politics. That's weekdays at 3 p.m. And don't forget to catch our evening rebroadcast of Democracy Now! At 5 p.m. This is Pacifica Radio, listener-sponsored, commercial-free, KPFT Houston.
Mm-hmm.
Are you interested in volunteering at KPFT? If so, come to our volunteer training session Friday, June 29th, 12 noon, or Saturday, June 30th at 3 p.m. located at KPFT Pacifica Radio, 419 Lovett Boulevard. We have opportunities in the news department and graphic design. In the production department, you can learn radio engineering or production assistance, fundraising, groundskeeping, building maintenance, or meet people and help us at any of the many events that KPFT does in the community. Add KPFT to your resume. Show the world you give of yourself and your time. Go to kpft.org and fill out a volunteer request form or call Anthony at 713-526-4000, extension 301. Come to the volunteer training session at the station on June 29th, 12 noon, or Saturday, June 30th at 3 p.m. You're listening to KPFT.
I'm going to specialize in TV VCR repair. I don't know if you listen to those promos or not. He was just going on about all these things you could learn. Production.
Grounds maintenance.
Groundskeeping.
I need someone to do it.
I want to meet people.
Or get your specialized degree in TV VCR repair.
Operators are standing by. All right. 713-526-5738. Appears that we already have a call in the queue, so that's awesome. We have plenty of open lines tonight. So, and no Barrett time.
No Barrett time. Barrett's in Florida with the Gators.
The Gators and the Skeeters.
Mm-hmm. And the Hurricanes.
He's retired.
And the Hurricanes.
Retired to Florida. He's driving slow and left his blinker on.
He's driving one of those like really, really expensive golf carts that are modded.
Modded golf carts, which also doesn't run. All right. I wonder if he's listening. Is he on IRC? I haven't even looked.
No.
Bum. All right. 713-526-5738. Groove House?
Yes.
Who's up?
All right. Up next on the second half of the show, we're going to take John.
John, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
I was just calling in. I have a MacBook Pro. I think it's from 2007. It's a little older. But I have a problem with the speakers. They are not working at all. And there's a red light that's coming out of the headphone jack. And I looked online, saw a
red light coming out of the headphone jack?
Right.
On a MacBook Pro?
Right.
2007. Is
that's
this the
dual
unibody?
Where it can do digital or the or regular audio out of the same jack.
Oh, okay. It sounded weird to me. I just want to make sure. All right.
So basically, one day the speakers just stopped working. It works if I put a headphones in or if I have a, you know, if I plug it into a speaker or something. But it just, the speakers won't work at all. And then whenever the headphones are unplugged out of it, and I try to turn up the volume or turn down, it just says there's a zero. It basically says like there's no sound coming out on the screen. So I was just wondering if you knew how to maybe prepare that or fix that.
So this is the obvious thing, but have you gone into the system preferences and sound and seen what the output is?
I have. It doesn't show that there is an output at all. It's weird. It's like it doesn't show that I have the ability to. I don't know. I don't know what happened, but I think maybe my sound card is messed up or something. But
well, which would mean you have a bad system board. Pete, do you concur?
I'm sorry, you were kind of cutting out.
It sounds like it sounds to me what he's describing, and Dwight, that it sounds like it's a problem with the actual hardware. At which point, because it's a MacBook Pro, it's going to be a system board issue.
I would assume it's hardware-related somehow, just because I don't think the red light would be on unless it thinks that there's something plugged in.
Right, something digital
so
plugged
if,
in.
And nothing's plugged in and the red light's on,
there's a short.
Either there's a short and it thinks something's plugged in, which could cause this kind of problem, or the motherboard somehow is messed up.
And if he's not seeing an output tab on his system preferences, that means that the system doesn't think there's any sound there at all. So I would suspect that it's a motherboard issue.
Okay. Yeah, I read online. A few people kind of said that it could be remedied by just kind of putting the jack in and out real quick. And that actually worked one time for like about 30 minutes, about 6 months ago, but it went back to not working at all. So you think it's a hardware issue then?
Yes, you probably have a good excuse to visit the Genius Bar.
That's okay. What I was going to suggest is then if it turns out, I know the put it in quickly and pull it out deal is what used to be a solution for the digital where it thought that it had digital output,
right,
and that stuck thing, and so they would be able to look at that better and diagnose it better.
Okay. All right, well, thank you.
All right, I hope that helps. Thanks for your call.
Yeah, thank you. Bye.
I have to remember that I got to drop the calls. What's so funny? What are we missing in here? They're having too much fun in the control room.
This is the show outside the show.
The show outside the show.
We were just talking about other things that advice is good for.
Oh, behave. All right. 713-526-5738. We've got one call in the queue, but all the other lines are open. Groovehouse is either going to answer your call and get you ready to be on the air, or listen to the Randy suggestions afflicted. All right, Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who's up next?
All right, up next, we're going to take Ali.
Ali, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hi, how you doing, guys?
Good.
You have a great show. Here's my question. My laptop, it's working good. Everything is fine. However, when I play videos from, let's say, CNN, MSNBC, or what have you, at home it plays fine. However, at work, the same laptop, the videos won't play. I don't get any kind of error. I don't get any kind of message. I'm thinking maybe it's the network settings or something. What do you guys suggest? Could it be a network setting? Or
it's not the same computer, right?
Right.
It's your work computer versus your home computer, your work network versus your home network.
All right. It's the work computer that I bring home. It plays all the videos.
Oh, okay. It is the same computer.
Yes.
All right. That's what I was asking. Is it the same computer? So you take the computer at home on your home network, works fine. You take the very same computer to work.
Right.
Doesn't work so well.
Yeah.
I would say that it's probably the network.
Okay.
It could be that your IT folks don't want you watching videos,
and they may be throttling it.
They may be blocking that.
Yep.
They may not give that the priority on the network for the traffic. They may have deprioritized that traffic.
Have you asked them?
Do you want them to know that
you're internal? When we have internal webcasts or some things like that, they play fine. It's just that when you go to a site,
that's right, because they're internal and they want you to watch it. I guess that's
what the deal. Okay, great. That was my question. Thank you so much, guys.
All right, thank you.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
All right, we're all out of calls now.
713-526-5738.
Draw these.
If you've got a technology question, computer question.
You know, I always find it interesting when people call us or email me about problems they're having at work, because you have to be careful there. Your IT department may be conspiring against you.
They usually are.
Or completely inept. Or both.
Sometimes ineptitude is the conspiracy.
They have formulated a plan to deprive you of CNN videos through their incompetence.
Exactly.
I should ask too while you had him on the air. I wonder if is it Wi-Fi in one place and Ethernet in the other. Or?
We should ask him also if he has a workstation at work. Can he watch videos on that?
And
he said it was a work
laptop.
Issue.
Right. But I wonder if the same problem manifests
on a desktop.
On a desk or for other people. All these questions we should have asked while we had them, but oh well. All right, 713-526-5738 is the number to call if you want to be on the air with us tonight here on Technology Bites. Okay, got to change that to JPEG. 713-526-KPFT. If you want to be on the air, all of our lines are open and available to talk to you and answer your questions. Ah, see a call coming in. Oh. Even now, Groovehouse will spring into cat-like action.
Yes, I will.
All right, 713-526-5738, if you want to be on the air with us tonight. We are entertaining your calls. You can see we have two calls in the queue. Oh, I don't see why not. We can announce that. Technology Bytes is going to be receiving an award tomorrow.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. All right, so we've announced it. All right, let's move on. the Houston Press, you know, the local independent news source, I guess, newspaper here in town, is hosting their second annual Web Awards. So since we didn't do anything actually web-related, we got an award for... And
wait a minute. Everything we do is web-related.
How so?
Well,
everything we do ends up on the web.
Exactly.
But that doesn't mean what we do is web-related. When I think of the Web Awards, I think of web pages and Twitter feeds and Facebook accounts. And
yeah, okay.
So not necessarily a web thing. And plus, the award is not web-related, I would point out. And I will tell you what it is. We got the award for the best in-real-life geek gathering.
Meetup. Right. Which happens to be the Geek Gathering.
So we got the award, which is not web-related.
Right.
So it means next Friday you can come to the award-winning...
The award-winning Technology Bytes Geek Gathering. That's correct. So we will be granted this award at the second annual Houston Press Web Awards, which if you want to go... Tickets are available. I don't know how much it costs.
I think they're like $25.
$20 to $25, but there's an open bar, and there's food, and there's entertainment. But it's a web award. So there's like, you know, and if you go to Houston Press, they've got the web award winners. I think Imelda has getting the award for the best Instagram account.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's the kind of stuff that we're up with, you know. Funniest Twitter feed, best bartending Twitterer.
Right. Yeah.
Houston-based technology stuff. So that's kind of cool. Every, like, 6 years or 5 to 6 years, we get acknowledged by the press.
Right.
I mean, Pete got Best Radio Sidekick once in a Houston Press Best Up Award. Best Technology Show or Best Computer Show.
I got best hashtag last year for the Hugh News tag.
Received a couple of music awards, a couple of best of Houston awards.
So that's you personally, though. That's not Technology Bytes.
I got best tech geek. Houston Press Best Of Award 1 year.
Ah, cool.
So that was kind of cool. But, you know, it kind of comes and goes. I think the Houston Press has to ignore us for a few years, and then once in a while they'll roll around and...
Oh, yeah, that's right, those Technology Bytes guys.
Yeah, we better do something for them.
Well, last year some of us were presenters at the web.
That was the best award of all. But apparently...
This year we're an award recipient. Next year we'll be parking cars out in front.
Ballet. We're doing the ballet.
That would be so much fun doing the... If all of us, did the valet at the Web Awards. No.
It would not be fun. Remember... You know how hot it is outside?
You know how... You want to be responsible for somebody's vehicle?
Yeah.
Remember along... Who was here for when we did the Celebrity Waiters?
That was before my time.
At the Jenny's Noodle House.
I remember that.
Yeah. All right, well, it looks like we might have killed enough time.
We got a few calls.
Beaten some hours. Let's get back to it.
All right, so who's up?
All right, up next, we're going to take Dustin.
Dustin.
Hi, gentlemen. Great show tonight.
Thank you.
I have a quick question about running a Windows environment on a Mac. So I have been... a long-time PC user, and I've been considering purchasing either a MacBook Pro or a MacBook Air, and then either using Boot Camp or some virtualization software to be able to run a Windows 7 environment on that MacBook. Alternatively, I would also consider using a PC and then in a virtual environment trying to run a Mac OS.
No.
Okay. The reason why I'm even looking to do this in the first place is that I'd like to start dabbling a little bit with iPhone app development, and it sounds like to be able to compile the app and publish it to the App Store, you actually have to do it on a Mac platform.
That's true.
So, what do you recommend? Do you recommend using boot camp and just, you know, picking an environment as you're booting up, or using a virtual environment to run Windows on a Mac?
It depends on what you're going to do with it. If you want to, like, play games and do heavy-duty graphics, intensive applications, you probably want to do boot camp. But okay, for almost everything else, the quality of the software, the virtualization software, is so good now, along with how powerful these Macs are, that you can run Windows in a virtual environment, and it is very smooth, very fast. In fact, in some cases, I've found running, I run Parallels and Windows 7 on Macs. I found that it is probably faster than most Windows PCs, because particularly if you're working with an Air or any device that has an SSD, a solid-state drive, it's just everything happens instantaneously.
Okay, and do you find dragging and dropping to be difficult with a Mac, nope, since it doesn't have buttons?
Nope, not at all.
What do you mean it doesn't have buttons?
Well, I mean, it's my understanding that, you know, when you're in a Mac environment using the trackpad, you can use, like, multi-finger gestures to be able to, like, hold down and...
But you don't have to use a... the trackpad allows you to do that, but there's a left and right click just like on the trackpad of a Windows laptop.
Right. You just don't see a button, but there actually is a physical press to it. Have you been into the Apple Store and played with one of these devices?
Obviously, I haven't spent enough time.
Now,
But you can also, like, go over something, press down, and hold it down like you're holding down the button.
Okay.
And then with another finger slide to drag it.
So, right.
And you can do that when you're in a Windows virtual environment?
Yes.
Everything works the same way. In fact, what's interesting is in Parallels, and I think the same thing is true in VMware Fusion, which is the main competitor, you can, you know, on a Mac, Command-C is copy. On Windows, is Control-C. When you're using Parallels, either one works. So you don't have to worry about muscle memory forgetting one thing or the other. Both of them work. And so, you know, you have certain benefits to it like that. It is the other nice thing is with both Parallels and VMware Fusion, you can get rid of the Windows desktop and have your Windows applications floating on the Mac desktop as though they are Mac applications.
Oh, very interesting.
Yeah, so they kind of coexist openly with the other ones, with the Mac applications. It really is a great way to work.
Well, gentlemen, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
All right, appreciate your call. Thanks. All right, yeah, I mean, you know, I still, even though it's been a while, it still feels like I'm a relatively recent convert to using a Mac. And it was not that hard to get used to. One of the things that tripped me up, and it seems to trip a lot of people up, is the idea that there's no right click, or, you know, that whole right left click thing going on in the Mac.
But there is.
But it's not enabled by default. Is it enabled by default on the new MacBook Pro?
Yes, the right click, the two finger right click, is enabled by default on new Macs.
Okay, but not the one finger right side of the trackpad.
No, that is not.
But you can enable
right
that.
What's enabled instead is the two finger. Two-finger tap to bring up the right click, and once you get used to that, when I find myself sitting down at a Windows notebook, I find myself two-finger tapping on the...
How many times have you tried to swipe the screen of your MacBook Pro?
I've probably done that twice. I've done that twice.
Yeah. But now, I use a Windows PC at work, and I use a Mac at home, and my muscle memory does that to me, but you get used to it after a while.
I'm almost always running Windows at the same time I'm running Mac. I'm going back and forth. I use the coherence mode, which is the mode that lets the Windows app sit on the desktop. But one of the cool things is if you have two desktops. You can have Windows running in a window, so you have the Windows desktop visible, and you can drag something from the Mac desktop onto the Windows desktop and then work with it with a Windows app, if that's the way you want to do it, and then drag it back to the Mac desktop. It's very versatile.
Awesome. All right. 713-526-5738 is, let me see which one's coming up next. Okay, I'll let you just tell me. Who's up next?
All right, up next, we're going to take Nick.
Now, Nick's got, okay, that's what I was going to comment on.
Hello?
Hello, Nick. You're on the air.
All right. think, guys. Thanks for my call. I have a computer that I purchased from a pawn shop.
Yeah.
And it had a is requesting a DDR password. It's a Toshiba. How would you get rid of that?
A what password?
It's actually for a password for the DDR.
DDR.
Yes.
I don't know what DDR is in terms of.
Let's see. Would it be dynamic?
All right, let me go back. We'll just say that there's two potential passwords on a computer. There's a hardware password, which asks you for a password before you even turn the computer on. And then there's an operating system password.
Okay.
Like a logon password. Now, one of the problems with buying a laptop from a pawn shop is that chances are, you know, it's got questionable background where it came from. And it's also got somebody else's software load on it.
Like your mama used to say, you don't know where it's been.
Right. So the thing that I would be looking at if I bought a laptop or if I bought a computer secondhand through a pawn shop or eBay or whatever is whether or not it came with the software to be able to reload it back to factory spec.
Okay.
Did it come with that?
Yes, I think. Yes. No, I don't have the software.
No, you don't have the software.
I don't have the software.
It was software. A great deal, though, wasn't it? You got a great deal from that pawn shop, right?
Oh, yes.
Ah.
Yes, like $20.
$20 for the laptop?
Yes, it's nice for two.
Well, I would consider spending the money you saved into getting a Windows 7 disk. How old is the laptop?
It's about, I think it's 09.
Yeah, we can sit. Do you know what make and model it is?
Toshiba.
No, but what model?
Oh, I don't have it right offhand right now.
What operating? Now, when you fire it up, does it seem to load up Windows?
Yes, but then it asks for
the password.
The password. You know, one is asks for username. Then it
asks so it's the Windows logon password that it's looking for. And your best bet on something like that would be to just get an operating system disk and reload it, or even maybe contact Toshiba and see if they'll sell you the restore disks. Usually they'll sell you that for like $10 or $20 just to give you a copy of the media so that you can put the disk in, boot up to the disk, and then just reload the system back to factory fresh. And then you put in all your own personal login information and off you go.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for your call tonight. All right. So, cool. If you're going to go buy a used computer, that's what I always question. You know, I guess a 2009 computer from a pawn shop for $20, that might have a legitimate pedigree. You know, maybe they paid $5-$10 for it. I don't know. But if you're going to buy a used computer, and if the person who sold it wasn't considerate enough to kind of reset the computer or provide the passwords, you really don't want to try to use a computer that was used by somebody else. Like Dwight said, you know, you don't know where that thing's been. So your best option is just to do a factory fresh reinstall the software. That way all the software is attributed to you. You don't have all these viruses or whatever else that person might have had on the PC. So that's my consideration on that. All right, Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who's up next?
All right, up next we're going to take Martin.
Martin, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hello. Windows XP and Windows 7, is there a way to speed it up? No, first of all, what's the best program to speed it up?
Well, there's not
other than doing a factory reload to get it just like it was when it was new.
Well, it depends on what's actually caused it to slow down. You know, I mean, if it's viruses and spyware, then an antivirus or an anti-spyware program might get you some of your performance back.
No viruses, spyware.
By what?
Using semantics for to protect it.
By what measure are you determining that it's slowed down?
Well, my clicking on stuff, and it feels slow to me compared to when I first got it.
All right, so do you know how much, have you done basic system maintenance?
Yes.
Defrag?
Yes.
all that good stuff. How full is your hard drive?
8 meg of memory.
8 meg or 8 gig?
About 50%. 8 gig.
8 gig of RAM.
Do you know what's running in the background while, in terms of, you know, when it boots up?
Looks like a whole lot of Windows stuff. When you do control or delete and go to the task manager.
Well, you'll see a lot of stuff in the processes and in programs. You might see a few things, but where you want to look in is the Jay, I'm drawing a blank. Damn.
Task manager?
No, not the task manager. The that utility that you use.
MS Config.
Yes, and MS Config is what you want to look in, which lets you turn things off when.
Do you know about MS Config?
Yes, I have turned off a lot of stuff that I don't need.
Right. One of the things that, you know, I don't know, but what is that noise? Is that us or is that you? All right. One of the things, the problem with trying to speed up a computer using a software program is I don't know of any that will really actually do what they're advertised to do. Right. You see these TV commercials for registry cleaners and all this crud. Don't typically find that they do what they say they're going to do. Whatever's slowing down your computer, you should be able to go in and figure that out and get what it is. Now, that's assuming that it's a software issue and you not have some kind of hardware issue going on. How old is the computer?
About 2 years. Is there a good measuring tool to determine are you speeding it up or not? Other than just my feel.
Yeah, there really isn't. There is some benchmarking stuff out there, but it really just depends. You know, your best measuring stick is your own experience with the PC. Now, one thing I have found that helps with a Windows-based computer is to try building a new user profile.
Okay.
So if you log into the PC and then create a new user and then log out and log in as that user, sometimes that new user profile will have a much better response time, and then you just migrate your documents and your files over to the new profile, and that can help out.
Okay.
Something to try. There is one registry cleaner out there that you might try, and I don't know that it will necessarily help, but it's called CCleaner, CCLEANER, and it's a free utility. It cleans up temp files, it takes a look at the registry, and it might get you some. But you tell me you're using Symantec as your antivirus?
Yes.
Are you using any anti-spyware tools?
No.
Try Malwarebytes.
Malwarebytes
on the Geek Radio site. If you go to geekradio.com and click on the spywares link, we have a link to it.
Okay.
Because your antivirus program may not have picked up that you may actually have spyware and not know it.
Okay.
So that's something to try.
All right.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. Good luck. Thank you. All right. We lost a call or two, maybe. But 713-526-5738. Who's up next, Groovehouse?
All right. Up next on the show, we are going to take Chris.
Chris, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
No problem.
I've got a IBM ThinkPad that, here we go. I found it in a dumpster.
Okay. All right, you win. You beat the pawn shop guy.
Wait. Well, you got to listen to this, though. Just a little background. The dumpster is right by a mini storage place where I happen to have a little repair shop. So these guys in the mini storage, they're always just chucking stuff in that dumpster. I found a brand new iPod in there in the box. One time, it was just sitting right there. They never opened it. They never looked at it. But anyway, I don't know how it got in there. But the ThinkPad was extremely clean. It was just sitting right on top. I grabbed it. The charger was right next to it. And I'm just looking at it, and you know, it's going over my mind. Well, why somebody chuck this in there? And I'm pretty handy. I took it home. I tried to fire it up. It basically said there was no operating system. I did a disk drive test on it, and the disk drive was faulty. I popped a new one in there, reinstalled Windows. The thing works great. Okay? I mean, the battery is in good shape. It holds a charge for a couple hours. You know, it's for surfing on the web or getting online, checking your email, it's great. There's two issues with it. One is it has a couple lines in the screen going, top to bottom. Is that worth trying to find a screen for it, perhaps? It doesn't bother me for what I use it for.
Well, you got it for free, so you're not out anything at this point. How old is the PC? Have you done any research to see when it was made?
Where I could tell, it's probably like 6 years old, five and a half, 6 years old.
So the cost of a six-year-old laptop to replace the one that you found in a dumpster would probably get you a fully functional screen. You could probably find a screen for it, but it's going to cost you a few $100. Maybe, yeah. Maybe plus, installation and everything. It's not going to be cheap.
Right, right. And I seriously wasn't even considering, maybe even messing with it. Because, go checking my email on it, leaving, running around the house. It works great for that. The other issue is that I can't seem to get a driver for, it says, if I go into Device Manager, it says that there's like a network controller driver.
You have to go to the website for the manufacturer and probably get the driver. So you have to get it downloaded to another computer and transfer it over to that and install it.
Right, right. Well, I can, I can use a wired, Ethernet cable, and it works fine.
Okay,
that way.
So yeah, if you go to the website, you can get the wireless drivers or whatever you need for that thing.
Well, I've tried that. I've tried every one listed on there for that model. So,
well, maybe it's defective. And why it was in the dumpster?
Yeah, it could be. If it would say network controller, why would the wired portion of it work? You know what I'm saying?
Not really. I mean, it's gonna if it sees the wireless device, it doesn't have a driver installed for it. It's gonna see it as a network device.
Yeah, but I don't even know if that's what it's asking for. It just says network controller. The wired portion of it, like I said, works.
So you're trying to make the wireless work?
Yeah.
And you got an unidentified wireless controller? Or you got it's probably the wireless. You need a driver for the wireless, and if it's not going,
is this Windows XP?
Yeah, it's XP Pro.
In the Device Manager, have you tried right clicking on the mystery device and say find driver?
Yeah, I have, and it's like I said, it won't find one from Windows. Like if it goes online, it won't grab one from there. And
when you look at properties, it gives you no information about who the manufacturer is?
Yeah, it gives PC Win, blah, 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 under the driver.
Right. So,
yeah.
So what you may be able to do is go to the manufacturer for that device and see what drivers are available and grab them and try installing them, or even from who makes the computer? It's a Toshiba, did you say?
No, it's a ThinkPad.
Go to Lenovo's website for the model for that, and they will usually list drivers for the various wireless cards that they have used in that model, and you may recognize it, download it there, and give it a try.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, because it just seemed to me like there was just half or a dozen or so different drivers listed for that, and it's like,
well, if you could do some detective work on what the device, who's the manufacturer.
Let me give you practical advice for this. When I set up a computer, a laptop specifically, with a clean install of Windows, and I start to have problems with the devices working because there's no driver. Windows has no driver for the device. Then you have to go to the manufacturer's site. Now, the problem is that the manufacturer may have released that computer with one brand wireless adapter in one run and another wireless adapter in another run. So they'll list multiple drivers.
Right. That's kind of the feeling that I'm getting.
Right. Well, let me finish.
There's so many of them.
Let me finish. What I've noticed is that you have to kind of go through and download them all. And only the ones that are drivers, not the applications, just drivers. And I've seen this with video drivers. I've seen this with audio drivers. I've seen this with network drivers. You download it. You install it. If it doesn't work, you download the other one, you install it, maybe it works. And you kind of have to go through this hit and miss. Now, if you had gotten this computer from the manufacturer instead of from a dumpster, you would have had a disc that had all those drivers on it, and you would have just plunked it in there, and it would have set it up all nice and pretty. But because you got this computer from a dumpster and you don't have the software that went with it, you're going to have to go through all this hassle. This is my argument every time somebody calls into the show with a computer that they found on the side of the road, they bought at a pawn shop, or they, you know, they inherited from a bum. Whatever. It's you save this money. Great, good for you. But if you're not capable of going through this rigmarole, then you have not really gotten a bargain. And you're not going to, your bargain is not going to extend to the, to a Wednesday night on Technology Bites where we're going to magically get this computer up and running for me. You got the bargain. You make it a bargain. You go do the footwork. Right. So what I'm telling you is not the most pleasant thing in the world. Now, you can go to, as I told the previous caller, you could contact IBM and see if they'll send you an image disc out for that particular model computer. And they'll usually do it for like $10, $10 or $20 for the cost of media. And it'll be a disc that matches your model, and you run that, and it puts all the software that was on that computer when it was brand new, including all the device drivers and all that, and you're out whatever the cost of that is, plus the dumpster dive.
There's two other things you can do. Look in the BIOS settings before the system boots up to Windows, and sometimes network controllers, the details, the hardware details will be listed in there depending on how that is set up. The other thing you can try doing is there's a little application called the Belarc Advisor, and the Belarc Advisor will do an inventory of the hardware and software on the computer and tell you what's there. It doesn't always work if there isn't an active driver, but it queries the BIOS, and it will tell you there if the BIOS knows what the hardware is. So do a Google search for Belarc Advisor.
B-E-L-A-R-C.
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 And do a search for that, and that's free. And it has many other benefits. For example, if you have a copy of Office, it will show you what the activation key is for it. So it has a lot of benefits to it. So grab that, and that could help you out as well.
Right. Okay. Well, sure. I appreciate that. The thing is, I've never had such a, you know, I help people fix their computers all the time with different problems and hardware problems, and I never had that degree of problem finding a driver for something before.
It can be very challenging with a laptop. I go through this all the time at work where, like I said previously, once the computer may have had one brand of something at one time. And again, you're not even sure that this computer is completely functional. So there could be that challenge as well. Anyway, I wish you a lot of luck, and thanks for your call. Groovehouse? Hello?
Yes.
Who's up next?
All right, up next on the show, we are going to take Gary.
Gary, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, guys. Thanks. Good show. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
I got a quick question. I hope it's an HP Pavilion DV8 laptop machine that's just a little over 2 years old. And my wife let it sit around for a while, and the battery went totally dead. When we started up again, the battery had to charge up, and charged up fine. And everything was working okay. And she shut it off, and she didn't use it for about a week or so, I guess, after that. And when she went to turn it on, the thing, the lights come on, but it doesn't really do anything except kind of sit there. So I don't know. It seems kind of weird that it would just die like that, but...
Now, this is a laptop, you say?
Yeah, it's an HP Pavilion laptop.
Which model?
DV8, I think it says, back.
Have you done the basic thing of taking the battery out and putting it back in?
Yeah.
And have you tried just powering it up with the battery out and the power supply connected?
No, I didn't try that.
Sometimes that's worth a shot in case the battery's causing a problem with it.
Okay.
Now, I've noticed with some of these HPs, how old is it?
Well, it's actually, it died 3 weeks after the extended warranty ran out. So,
still, how old is it?
2 years and 3 weeks. It's about 2 years and...
Okay.
little over 2 years.
All right. I mean, it could be that the computer just has a physical problem. I've had my experience with HPs. It's been a while since I've worked with them, but I've had them where they'll just die. You know, you'll press the on button and a light will blink and nothing else ever happens.
Yeah, the lights come on, but that's about it, yeah.
Right.
It's a big paperweight right now. So there's no circuit breaker. You don't think the battery is holding it from... I guess I'll take the battery out.
Take the battery out and then fully unplug it, and that should just start discharge. Any kind of leftover stuff there.
Yeah, okay.
And then plug the power in and then try to turn it on without the battery and see what happens.
Okay, all right. I'll give that a shot. Other than that, it's kind of like a paperweight, huh?
Could be.
Yeah, well.
Unless you're willing to put money into it to get it fixed. I mean, there are companies that might work on it, but, you know, it's usually the return on your investment on the laptop isn't that great.
Yeah, you like throwing money away. You could put it toward another machine, I guess.
Right.
So if that doesn't work, I just dig out the hard drive and try and save the data, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll give that a shot, guys. Thanks very much.
All right. Thanks for your call.
Bye-bye.
All right. Got plenty of calls now, apparently. All right, Groovehouse, who's up next?
All right. Up next, we're going to take Frank.
Frank, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Yes, sir. Thanks for taking the call. I'm not too familiar with Mac operating systems at all, and a friend of mine has a Mac, and he was telling me that YouTube and Vimeo and some other video players used to play full screen, but they don't anymore. Where would you look to fix that?
He says that YouTube does not play full screen on his Mac anymore.
Right, right.
So what happens when he clicks the full screen button?
I think he told me that it just like goes black or nothing happens. Or actually, no, sorry. He told me that he can't even click it. It's just disabled.
Well, and when he talks about the full screen button, you talk about the little green button at the top or the software button on a YouTube player in the browser?
On the player, on the player itself.
On the player, and nothing happens with that?
Right.
That sounds like a YouTube problem.
Sounds to me like actually like more like a browser problem.
Right.
Well, he says he's using, it happens in his Chrome.
What happens in Safari?
In Safari, I guess it works, but on the Chrome.
So it's a browser problem. So
right.
It's a problem with Chrome. So the first thing I would try would be to uninstall Chrome, to ditch Chrome and get a new copy of it and try that out.
Okay.
And since it's Chrome, it's using HTML5, so it's not a Java or Flash issue.
Do you know if he's using... There are four different variants of Chrome, depending on how adventurous you are. There's kind of the stable version.
I think he told me 4, 7, and 10.
Well, that doesn't... No, there's the stable version, there's developer, there's beta... And there's what's called Canary. Do you know which one he's using?
I'm not really sure.
Sounds like he needs to call the show.
Tell him if he's using a beta version or the developer version, which he would know that that's a frequent problem if you're not using the stable version. That they'll send over an update and it'll break something and it won't work anymore. So what he may want to do if he's using one of these non-stable versions to move to the stable version of Chrome.
Okay, excellent.
All right, thanks for
your call.
Thanks
a lot, guys.
Sure.
Bye.
All right. Boy, a couple of calls tonight have touched on some of my hot buttons. One, buying used computers from junk stores or pawn shops or dumpsters.
Finding them
or cobbling together two disparate pieces of hardware. And people who call with computer problems other people are having. Because it's hard enough to troubleshoot this with the person who's actually having the problem.
Right.
But you have this kind of like vague recollection of what my friend told me he was experiencing. And then, part of troubleshooting is being able to ask specific questions and get answers. So like, what version of the operating system? What version of Chrome? What happens when you do this? Well, he didn't tell me that because, you didn't troubleshoot. Okay, so anyway,
Rant. And here's our next caller who's calling about a computer that his friend got from a bum.
A friend of mine got a computer from a bum, and it's also having a problem. All right, so All right. Groovehouse, who's up next?
All right, up next, we're going to take Blake.
Blake, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Oh, thanks a lot, guys, for taking my call.
No problem.
First, I have to just admit up front, even though I have a master's degree and I'm a professional counselor, I fell hook, line, and sinker for the worst scam. It's been called the Windows Care scam. And these folks called from India saying they were with Microsoft and that they needed, that there had been a bunch of electronic messages sent from our computer.
I've heard that scam.
Well, and what they did to prove it is they said, well, go to your C file and to some System 32, and they said, try to delete that file. And I couldn't. They said, see, that's the hacker. And I believed them. And then they charged me $280 and put the PC analyzer on there. But for the whole 2.5 hours, I don't know what they were taking out of my computer because I gave them total access. And I'm wondering, what can I do? How can I know what they've done to me and know the extent if they've stolen valuable data? Because I fell for it. I paid them, and it's bad.
Yeah. What I know of this scam, they don't... first of all, let's ask you this. Do you store anything on your computer that contains, like, passwords and account numbers?
Oh, yeah, our bank.
No, but do you, like, have a file that has that information in it?
Oh, no. It's just saved on the Internet.
Right. So, and when you go to your bank site, you have to log in, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So you don't have, like, a document that says, here's my account numbers, here's my Social Security number, here's my passwords.
None of that.
So there was none of that for them to get. See what
that's
I'm saying?
That's what I thought, yeah. I thought they couldn't have heard it that way.
But Dwight brings up a good point. Now, if they decided to install a keylogger on your system to capture that data...
They did.
You know that?
Because I went through 6 steps of a real reputable site that said how to get rid of this Windows Care. It was 6 steps, six, seven steps, and one thing that I looked... about all these tests I ran, one of them was these keyloggers, some Trojan horses and stuff that were I had to get rid of, but they didn't put a keylogger in.
They did or did not?
They did.
They did. Okay. My advice to you is, because you've already kind of gotten suckered and hit really hard with this really, really bad thing, and you put your computer in the hands of somebody that you really have no idea what they did and how good they were at what they were doing when they did it.
And how did they know my Microsoft computer's license number? That's how they proved that they said they were who they said they were. They had it. It's this 20-something digit code, and they said, this is your license number, right?
How did they verify that with you?
They had it somehow.
But they read it. So they called you, and before they ever got on your computer.
No. First, no, you're right, sir. They called, then they said, get on your computer. But then they said, before they took over remote access, they said, is this your license number? I went, yes.
But had they already connected to your PC?
Oh, they must have.
If you gave them access or whatever, I don't know. Do
okay,
this for
so
me.
Anyway.
No. For my own edification.
Okay.
They called you up. They said, we're so-and-so, and we've determined such-and-such.
Yes.
How did they get connection to your PC? Did they have you go to a website?
No, they installed a quick program that gave them remote control access.
Okay, but how did they get that software installed on your computer? Did they have you go get it?
Yes, I had to go somewhere, download it, and then it gave them remote.
All right, so
access.
When you went and downloaded that software, that's what gave them the ability to connect. Now, had you already downloaded that software when they told you what your license key was? Or did they tell you what your license key was?
Yes, split second later.
Okay,
yes.
Yeah, so once they had that, it broadcast that to them. It told them what that key was, so that was how they were able to trick you.
And then they said, well, you can't delete this file, and that's the hacker, which was, now I learned, bull crap.
Right.
So anyway, we changed all of our bank accounts, our credit cards. We went through like $3,000 worth of stuff. It was horrible. and I'm hearing that they may have just sold us a bogus PC analyzer.
I'm sure they did.
Well, they did, but and that was the extent of it. But they call three times a day, sir. They're still trying to scam us. And when we report them to the FBI, they keep calling. And I'm just wondering what else could they might have done, despite me doing all these things and removing Trojan horses.
Well, as I was going to say,
yes,
before I derailed it and actually asked you all those other questions. Because you have been so thoroughly hoodwinked and hornswoggled,
I was.
I would suggest that your best course of action in terms of protecting your PC would be to reload your system from backup or using your recovery or restore disks,
which we have.
I would first copy off your important files, your images, your. Your documents and so forth, and then I would just wipe that computer clean and reinstall everything. That way you will know that you don't have anything lingering
now,
or lurking.
Can I use our Mosey backup that we pay for, a professional edition, since it's our business computer? Can we use that to help create this backup?
When was the last time? Do you have a backup that's recent from before these people got on your PC?
Oh, yeah, Mosey backs up every day.
All right, so you could use the Mosey. Does the Mosey back up the entire system?
Well, the first run does, and then the second one just backs up changes.
Okay, and it backs up the operating system and all the installed apps and everything? Yes, then I would go to that Mosey backup and follow the steps for restoring your system and restore it to a day before these people got on your computer.
So more than a system restore, though, you're saying... go to the restore it all with Mosey, and then wipe it clean and reinstall it all.
I'm assuming, based on what you're telling me, that Mosey has a snapshot of your computer.
Yes, and I'm saying I can use that.
So when you go through the recovery process with Mosey, and I don't know Mosey, and I haven't used it, but if you go through you should be able to let that reload your system back to a date before these people got on your PC.
Okay, so that's one thing to do. What's the other thing I can do?
Well, the other thing you could... No, that's the only thing I would do. At this point, because it's so thorough and you really don't know what they are capable of, you want to make sure that you've wiped them completely off your system. The other thing you may want to do, because they could deposit rootkits that could go really deep, or even...
They had 2.5 hours, sir.
Yeah.
They were just on it.
You might want to actually take it to a technician, somebody like the computer hospital, and let somebody actually... That's true. I mean, you could have somebody... But what they'll do is, you know...
Charge you $280.
But
it'll be a real fix.
Luckily, we have a friend that's a super-duper computer professional computer programmer who helps us in our website consulting business. And so he can kind of come over and do some pro bono work with us. He's a super expert.
Well, let him have a look at this. Talk to him a bit. You know, he could help you do the restore, backup your files. You know, make sure you got a good backup in place, and then just reload that system back to a state before you got hit by these criminals.
Okay. And then as far as, I personally don't think we had our account, because nothing was stolen from us, no money from accounts or anything, credit cards.
My guess is that what they did is they just took you for the $280 and they moved on.
Right, and they're keeping, by the way, for your audience, they're still calling me upwards of three times a day, and now they say they laugh and they hoot and holler at us when we say you're busted, and they don't even care.
Don't even engage them to that level, because they...
I did once, but they know you
as a sucker now, unfortunately. They know
I was,
you as a sucker.
Not anymore, but I was.
But, yeah, just don't give them the time of day and move on.
Thank you so much. I hope this helps your other callers.
Well, I appreciate you calling and sharing that story with us.
Okay, bye.
I'm sorry that happened to you. Yeah, that's unfortunate.
Although, if you're bored and they call, like, just stringing them along and playing dumb as long as you can, if you're bored, it could be fun, and just see if you can get them to get so impatient that they want to get away from you.
Yeah, except they're not going to let you stay on the phone very long without a valid credit
card.
See
if you can get them to wire you money so that you can transfer money into their account.
Let's play the speed round.
Tell them you're a Nigerian prince.
All right. Well, we got two calls in the queue and about 5-6 minutes left in the show, so we're going to speed through these calls. And
first call in the speed round is Arnold.
Arnold, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Yes, I have a couple of questions regarding about entering the BIOS under my Windows XP.
Okay.
Yes, pretty much I have a Windows XP Home Edition. I already know you have to press the delete key to actually go into the enter the setup.
Yep.
Pretty much I hold down the button, but nothing happens. It goes right through the, it actually passes right through the whole setup and it goes right through the Windows logo.
All right, so when you turn on your computer, it says press delete to enter setup?
It doesn't say it. It's just pretty much, it goes right.
Okay, pretty much.
It says, pretty much, it shows a list of all what it has inside like the hard drive, the disk drive, the floppy drives. And
I know what BIOS tells us.
Not all of them are delete. Some of them are F2 or F5.
Who makes the computer?
Sony VAIO.
So if you Google search enter BIOS for Sony VAIO, it might be a different key because sometimes they use the F2, the F10.
Okay. See if I have another question regarding about that. The reason is that that my disk drive is not working properly, or it doesn't work anymore, but it still reads. Does that actually interfere with the BIOS?
It doesn't interfere with the BIOS. If your disk drive's having a problem, most computers are designed to automatically detect the hard drive configuration into the BIOS, so you really typically never have to go into the BIOS setup at all.
No, not the hard drive, but the CD-ROM.
Same thing with the CD.
The reason is because when it turns on, it goes right through the CD drive. And it starts like it sounds like it's reading, but it doesn't operate nor it doesn't open normally. When I actually, it gives me a list.
It could just be a defective drive. I don't think going into the BIOS is going to solve this problem for you.
Yeah, the reason is...
Listen, we're out of time. I'm going to have to let you go, and we're going to got one last call in the queue. Sorry I couldn't help. You can contact us via the website, and I'll try to answer that question for you.
Last call, we're going to take Isela.
Isela, you're on the air real quick.
Hi. I'm calling because my husband's or our computer, it's an eMachines computer. It's about 2 years old, and every time that we boot it boots up for about 8 minutes. Everything works perfectly fine, 8 to 15 minutes, and then it just shuts off. Bam, turns off. Everything just shuts down.
Sounds to me like you have a power supply problem.
That's what we were thinking.
Probably cooling related.
Could be heat related.
Like either the CPU or the cooling on the power supply is not
right. So it's getting hot enough to cause it to shut down or short out and shut down. So okay. Open it up and maybe blow it out with an air duster. Sometimes that helps because
so,
they get a
so
lot.
We opened it up and he blew it out with the air duster. That didn't seem to help.
Probably
that's
the power
what he
supply.
Thought it was that it was heating up.
Yeah, yeah, you'll probably need to get a new power supply and also make sure the heat sink on the CPU is the fan. If there's a fan on there, make sure that that's working properly.
Or get a Mac.
That was my option.
Go for it.
All right, well, I hope that helps.
Thank you.
All right, thank you for your call. All right, well, and that's that. So we've done our bit here tonight on Technology Bites. 2 hours. Interesting calls. Dumpster divers and pawn stars. All right. Well, we're glad you could tune in and be a part of Technology Bites tonight. Don't forget, we'll be back next Wednesday, of course. But Geek Gathering is a week from Friday when it's also our 17th anniversary. We'd love to see you come out for that. It looks like a lot of people already RSVP'd, so cool.
Next week.
All right. Well, this has been Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Slicked.
I'm Dwight. And he's
Groove House.
And we're out of here.
Have you listened to KPFT in HD yet? KPFT has two additional programming channels available to owners of HD radios, and we stream both online. It's like getting several at once for free while actually being tuned in with an HD radio to 90.1. Hear what you're listening to now on HD1. KTRU Rice Radio now airs on KPFT HD2. Our HD3 programming stream includes some of our most popular programs, including Democracy Now!, Uprising, Explorations, BBC News, Free Speech Radio News, and Alternative Radio. In addition, you can hear shows like Counterspin, Flashpoints, and other great programs. Visit kpft.org for a guide on HD radio and our full schedule of HD programming. You can also click the streaming link to hear our HD programming via the web. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, 90.1 on the FM band and HD1, as well as alternate programming on HD. KPFT, Houston.
1 in 9 Americans listens to a local public radio station on a regular basis. Many use stations like KPFT to make voting decisions, music choices, their own conclusions about the world, or where to go over the weekend. That's because less than 0.5% of programming on commercial stations goes to local public affairs. Why not consider supporting KPFT as a major donor? Whether as an individual or an organization, major donors help KPFT in many ways. Major donors help big station projects and ensure KPFT gets the money it needs to survive without all those pledges. Drives. Just call our development director at 713-526-4000 to become a major donor today. Your donation of $5,000 or more helps keep independent